The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, hello and greetings to the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot and glad to have you on board once again. And the season has officially started here in the Northern Hemisphere. Swiss Pro Trix has come and gone. And that basically accelerates the whole procession of competitions coming up in a very, very short space of time. And I get to talk to one of my good friends about the season to come and what he hopes to do and how he feels about things that are going on in the background. His name is Freddie Winter. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So, I didn't have an awful lot of time to interview you on site after the Swiss Pro Trix. I needed to get on the road myself and needed to get some stuff done. But you were along dockside to do the interviews for the Swiss Pro Trix. I know it's not quite your comfort zone because you're more in tune with slalom compared to the other events, but. Kind of give us your sense, a little bit of a vibe, and as to what you experienced there, feet away from some of the finest athletes on the world on a trick ski.
Well, I hope it wasn't too incredibly obvious that I was out of my comfort zone, but I was a little bit. I mean, you know, I'm no journalist, so you know, but I had a really good time. It was really fun. Those guys, I like them all. They're great people, and I mean. I guess for me to kind of stand on the dock, you know, and sort of see the nervous energy that I know so well from my personal, you know, slalom tournaments was great. It was great. And also kind of interesting to see a different vibe. I mean, like I kept kind of marveling, I guess, as the day went on. You know, me, I'm 33 years old. I'm not the youngest guy at all, but I'm still maybe not middle of the pack, but, you know, with you know, Chris Parrish, Thomas DeGasperi, Will Asher, all in their 40s, I'd stand on the dock with people that are quite a lot older than me. And then actually, you know, you had Kevin Jack there, was the oldest guy, born in 1987. So he was older than me, but then Adam Pecos is like 31 and Tebow like, yeah, 32, whatever. And then everyone else seemed to be about 14. So it was quite amusing. I mean, just the difference in the fields was very interesting.
There was like everyone up until about 24, and then from 24 it then ratcheted up into like the mid-30s type deal, you know. I mean, there was a little bit of an age gap there. But you mentioned Tebow, and an overall competitor, tremendous slalom skier, excellent jumper as well. You know, I touch upon him a little bit. And right out the chute, I mean, he tricked nearly 11,000 points, and I think that was his best score in like about three seasons, because he hadn't had an awful lot of opportunity to trick. I mean, you know, I mean, what do you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really, really good is that there's, you know, another tournament and an opportunity for people to compete in tricks. And I mean, you know, like I say, I'm a big fan of tricks. I'm a big fan of all those trickers. And I mean, going back to the young guys, I mean, you know, that's what I found so amazing standing there and hanging out with them, was that, you know, the sort of, I guess, emotional maturity of people of such a young age. I mean, I was useless on a slalom ski under pressure until I was maybe, you know, early 20s.
Okay.
And for them to kind of, you know, I'm talking about Martin Labra and Matty Gonzalez. I mean, they are young dudes. And I mean, I was doing like a junior European to that age, and I was absolutely, you know, my heart was in my mouth the whole time, and just, you know, couldn't make it work. So for those guys to do so well under such pressure, and, you know, with the cameras on them, with, you know, someone idiot turning up trying to interview them before they ski, you know, this is really, really impressive.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of get the sense you're getting more and more comfortable in the role. Hopefully, not too comfortable going forwards, mind you. But I mean, you seem to be reveling in the whole, you know, I don't know, every man type role when it comes to talking with these folks such as Martin Labra and Matias Gonzalez, you know, and you know, you'd up until like about a few seasons ago, the whole notion of actually having someone on the dock side going up to them before they ski and then talk to them about their upcoming performance wouldn't have even been thought of, but I'm guessing people are kind of like warming to you, and you know, and they're comfortable about talking to you about what's going on, and then happy to explain what happened afterwards too.
Yeah, I think that it's a big part of our sport. You know, if you want to have a future, we need to show the personalities. I mean, you see with the success of Drive to Survive, that and you know, Full Swing in golf and all this sort of these sort of series. The more you can get an understanding of the characters, the more people are going to emotionally invest in the sport. And we've got a lot of great characters. I mean, you know, across the three disciplines, you've got, you know, these absolute legends of you know, Freddie Krueger and Will Asher and Thomas DeGasperi, you know, at the top end. And then these young guys, Charlie Ross, you know, it would be similar to a lot of the trickers, very, very young. And then everyone in between, everyone's doing a different thing. Everyone's got a completely different outlook and a different way of doing things. So I think we're very lucky as a sport to have such interesting people. And we really need to show that through interviewing on the dock, which I think is fantastic, but also, you know, through all the other means and dare I say, not through sort of cleansed and contrived personal social media, but actually getting real reaction that isn't sort of so premeditated that you might get when people do it themselves.
A little bit more authentic and more genuine type deal is probably what you're trying to get at, isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, like you, there are going to be times. I mean, you know, you look at the Drive to Survive is such a good example of sport. I mean, you know, and they say it's theatre, but when you see the real reaction of people, the awkward interactions, the frustration with the person that, you know, caused a crash or whatever, I mean, that's what people are excited about. I mean, that's the one thing I would say that I kind of find frustrating on interviews is when people go, oh, I'm just so happy to be here. It's like, well, hey, you did badly, you know, like you can't lie. I mean, there's no point, because who are you fooling? People know that you don't work at something for your whole life and then turn up and fall early and you're, oh yeah, I'm just happy to be here. No, you're not happy. That's what I find funny.
You know, I mean, and that's a thing as well. I mean, with the skiers that do default to that kind of response, bear in mind that for the vast majority of those skiers, English isn't quite their first language type deal. So they're trying to verbalize how they feel and just having a little bit of trouble doing so. But in the vast majority of the cases here in this event and a lot of other tour stops and on the water ski pro tour in the slalom and what have you, you know, it's expected of them now. You know, I mean someone's going to come to the dock, whether it be you, whether it be Lorenzo, whether it be Wade or Stephen Island or even Elizabeth Island. You know, you're gonna be talking.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think people have such a... Even if you're not speaking your first language, you're able to put across what you feel. And I think, like, maybe my favourite interview from the weekend that I had was Martin Labra, right? He got off the water, he tricked in the high 10,000s, and he was visibly disappointed. And, you know, he's obviously a great skier, but he thought he tricked underneath himself. And he said, yeah, you know, he wasn't negative, but you could just tell he was very genuine. And then happily, after that, he then got on the podium, his second podium in a row, which was really, really cool. But that's what excites me is the less sort of sanitized, you know, real reaction. And I think that, you know, that's what the people at home want to see. And that's, you know, that's the success of TWBC. TWBC is the only one doing these interviews, you know, to a high quality and in an organized fashion. And that's why I think that, you know, all the camera angles that, you know, so much is put into that and all the drone shots and whatever, it's all great. But to me, the main thing of why TWBC is better, you know, than some of the other ones we see is that you've got the human reaction prior and after and you've got more of an access to the athletes.
Indeed, indeed. No, and the format that Clint and Vincent came up with for this event, very, very similar to the slalom, which we're going to see in 2 weeks' time, brought to you exclusively live on TWBC. Got to put that in there. And do you reckon that it transferred over seamlessly, or could there be some things you would like to see to enhance it a little bit better still?
No, I think it was perfect. I think that to be honest with you, I'm a big fan of trick skiing, just as something to watch. And I think the format was perfect. And I think that honestly, it's the purest form of water skiing in some ways. You don't need a course. You just need a boat with a wake and a skier and a ski and some rope. And that's perfect to move anywhere. And I think that's, you know, this was a great, in my opinion, first example of putting that on. And we need to, as a sport, build a package to go to these sort of more downtowny areas in front of people where, you know, it's not built for slalom, it's not built for jump, but you can trick there and get tricking out in front of people. And I mean, there's no reason why with the less necessity for organization and putting a course in and a ramp and all that sort of stuff, trick skiing really should be the one that has the most events per year. It's the most successful, it's the most easy to understand, it's actually got the most variety. And beyond that, you know, there's all these great amazing young athletes, and we need the sport needs to support them. They're all so young, but you know, you get to be my age or younger and you can't support yourself off, you know, 3 or 4 events a year, and obviously the more events there are, the more sponsorship there is. So you know, hopefully that can grow. The one thing I'll say personally, I don't like this sort of waiting around for the scores. I mean, I know that's sort of part of the game, but I think that, you know, that does take away a little bit from the suspense. I don't know how you can fix that.
Well, there is something that's one of the innovations, that's iTricks. It wasn't available in this competition because it's still very much in its infancy, you know, and even now that they're still trying to get a little bit of the bugs out the system, you know, and get it familiarized amongst our officials out there, you know, before it gets thrown into really hardcore events such as Swiss Pro Tricks. You know, that would have accelerated the amount of time that it would have taken for the scores to be realized, certainly in my opinion. And I don't know about you, but what do you reckon on that?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it at Malibu Open last year, and I mean, as much as I was skiing that day, I did tune in. My roommate for that weekend was Joel Poland, and he was getting up early and doing that, so I watched on the TV. It's going to be fantastic, and you know, Donald Connolly, the guy that's invented it, is just a force for good for this sport. There's no doubt about it.
Oh yeah,
and the amount of effort he's put into that, I think it's going to be amazing. I don't know quite what the next steps are to get it in, but I mean, it should be in. I hope it's available for the World Championships this year, because then, you know, we can see things happening. It happens point by point.
Yeah,
you can see the tricks being added in one by one as they do it, which is just so incredible. So hopefully that comes along, and that will fix a big problem with the sport, that you know, that tension will come back into it, and then suddenly we've got a really better sport for the skiers, but also a more, you're not sound like a marketing idiot, but you know, a more sellable sport, you know, to take around the place. People will actually invest more in it.
Yes, indeed. You know, one of the arguments that was made towards the end of like the former American Water Ski Pro Tour, you know, as it transitioned from tournament skiing, you know, slalom and jump towards wakeboarding, you know, is because of all of the logistics that were involved in putting a slalom course, putting a jump course, and then you had and wakeboarding was there. It didn't need any of that, you know, and the sport suffered for years and years after that. Now we have an event that's there, that you can take a boat, bring trick skiers from it onto a site. You know, they actually tried this a few seasons ago in Rotterdam on like a canal underneath the shadows of I don't know what's the name of that vodka, Kettle Vodka, that place right in the middle of the Netherlands. And I mean, it worked there, but you know, nothing really was gained from that particular event, and now we're at the point where we're like saying, "Hey, Trix is back. Who knew?" You know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I think that it's never been more exciting, and I think that a lot of the people that I've talked to in the last couple of days just said it was an incredible thing to watch. And yeah, I mean, let's get it out there. We need a traveling tour of Trick Ski tournaments in public areas. I don't think the slalom's built for it. I don't think the jump's built for these areas particularly, because there's just a lot of logistics that goes in, and conditions affect slalom and jump more than they do tricks. So, you know, the great thing is we have a webcast that everyone in the world, 8 billion people, has access to if they've got an internet connection, which, you know, that's a great way to build spectators. We want people to turn up on site, like Moomba. It's just incredible. But, you know, slalom and jump can happen with a huge audience online, but then tricks, we can do both. We can have it online, but also in front of these things. And that, you know, the more popular trick gets, which I really believe it can get hugely popular, then the more it's going to push towards the other two disciplines, and, you know, and vice versa.
All right, then. We've spoken a little bit about the men so far as the trick skiing is concerned. I don't know whether we've touched upon Dorian Llewellyn's little feat of escapology, you know, in the first round, where he didn't quite get over the line, and that trick ended up being scored as a wake five front instead of a ski line a five front type deal. But let's talk about the women, shall we? I mean, because they came out and they really showed off their best skills in this competition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to tell you, Tony, I'm not the guy to get technical on trick skiing. What I is, obviously there's a big three, and they're all just, you know, phenomenal. Erica came out on top this time. She's had a phenomenal year, obviously, Moomba and the Swiss Pro Trick. She's, you know, got, I guess, you know, a handful of trick events coming up, and I'm just going to want to keep that 100%. Record, but then, you know, because you're going to be pushed as hard as you possibly can by Neely and by Anna. And then there's, you know, Kennedy Hansen. She's 20 years old and she's getting better and better. And, you know, can she break into that top three?
She's a raging Cajun.
Is she a raging Cajun? I actually didn't know that.
Oh, you did? I just wanted to nail that into you a little bit, you being a former Warhawk and all.
I had a really nice time talking to her and I won't hold it against her. it's great. I feel uncomfortable sort of talking out the technicalities of it, because I just don't have that background. But you know what I can see as a fan of sport, I can turn on any TV show and kind of sport on TV and kind of understand the competitive element. And obviously that we've just got these three incredible skiers who are just battling back and forth, and then there's a chasing pack who are trying to break into that, and that, you know, that can only be great for the sport. And the fact that they're all so young, I mean, Erica is the sort of eldest one, and she's a lot younger than me, and then, you know, Neely and Anna are, you know, very early 20s. It's incredible. There's a long future ahead for them, and like I say, we as a sport need to facilitate their ability to make a living from trick skiing. Otherwise, we're going to lose this you know, huge potential for them to, you know, grow the sport going forward.
All right, then. Speaking about that a little bit, one of the things that you did among your interviews, I mean, you interviewed Joel Poland right at the very end as he came to the realization after Pato's fall. Early on in his final set, that he was the champion with 12,010 points, right? And you had a long drawn out conversation there with him as to what his schedule is going to be looking like so far as the events that he'll enter. You know, whether he'll chase down the slalom events such as San Gervasio and Caiaphas and all that kind of thing. And he came through with a response that was quite interesting. Could you sum that up for us a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, he said that he is not going to do any single slalom tournaments. He's going to do events that have only two or more disciplines in, which I think it's very admirable. I mean, I don't think Joel would mind me saying this. You know, just he's probably going to be more competitive in the jump and the trick fields. He's got pro wins in both of those, so it makes sense that he would kind of in some ways, you know, double his money and do the multiple discipline ones. But also, which is a huge part of it too, is he is a massive advocate for overall skiing, and actually the best advert for it in the world with what he's doing on social media and just his, you know, he's a great personality. He with his ability on the water and his investment into that, into the overall discipline, I mean, he, you know, he's got to promote as much as he can the all three disciplines equally. And I think it's an admirable thing to do. You know, like, people do want to have Joel Poland turn up at their water ski site. And I think that people, you know, we as a sport, everyone wants to see multiple the disciplines happening at the same event. You know, like Mastercraft Pro, Malibu Open towards the end of the year. You know, you got the Masters, you got Moomba, which just happened. These are fantastic events because you can watch, you know, a high quality webcast, hopefully, with with all the narratives. The more packed in, the better. You know, if you're not the biggest fan of slalom, which some people aren't, you know, you got jump. If you want to watch it all, you can sit and watch all day. You know, men's, women's, jump, slalom, you know, hopefully trick as well. Joel understands, as much as the rest of us really should understand, that the more we can pack in, the more exciting the events are. Of course, the boundary to that is money. You know, in order to put on an extra discipline, you have to find more cash prize. So,
yeah,
you know, those organizers that are putting in money just for slalom, they might have to raise, I don't know, $30,000 in prize money. Well, then you add in jump, you know, it might be 60, and you add in tricks, it might be 90. So that's just a huge barrier. Not everyone's capable of doing that because, you know, sponsors are hard to find, you know, even to cover one discipline. But, you know, hopefully with all the work everyone's doing, with what TWC is doing, with what Water Ski Pro Tour is doing, World Water Skiers, all of these, you know, have the same goal of growing water skiing as a whole sport. And as that, as eyeballs grow, as the number of eyeballs falling on the sport grows, then sponsorship comes in too. And then those prize messages get more and more easy to find. And then we can have slalom, trick and jump at every single tournament.
Yeah, that's certainly what we wish for ultimately going forward. You know, I mean the number of events continues to grow. I mean last season, I had the privilege of going to Caiaphas to compete in that event, and that was an event and a half. I tell you, you probably saw the webcast. You might have even caught glimpse of the new opening video sequence on this last webcast that we did at TWBC for the Swiss Pro Tricks. You know, and you had like your EDM music. You had the saxophonist or whatever you call that, you know, and it was a really, really good party atmosphere. And when you create that kind of atmosphere, the people will come, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I was there and just loved every minute of it. George Hazizi, put it on, is just an incredible guy. I mean, there was talk from a lot of people saying he should just organize all the buddy tournaments because he did such a good job. Yeah, that's one of the tournaments I'm really, really looking forward to this year. It was great. I had one of my fellow competitors turn to me the day before the tournament, and he said to me, "I don't care what tournament's happening, you know, on the same weekend as this event next year, I'm coming to this tournament." So, you know, it was that good. We've as athletes, we've rarely been this well looked after and had as much fun. That's the sort of thing we need, absolutely. And I think, and to your point, it came across on the webcast. You know, everyone could see how great it was. I got a lot of texts saying, "Oh my god, you know, there's like a DJ on the dock with you. That's weird." And I'm like, "It was amazing." And they're like, "Yeah, no, it looked incredible."
Yeah, I just can't remember. I just can't forget the nervous face of Jamie Ball on the starting dock. You know, dancing around with George aloft in the slalom ski above her head. Please do what you want the slalom ski, but don't drop it. Type deal. It was a really fun atmosphere.
Yeah, George wouldn't get a hold of my ski. Yeah, I'd wrestle him first.
Oh, yes, indeed. Okay, which kind of neatly makes us go to the next point. You know, as we've spoken about tour stops and what have you, Swiss Pro Tricks and stuff like that. Okay, let's turn your attention to you. So far as the competitive season coming up, because it's going to look a lot different this season coming around based upon what happened around about this time last season, right?
I mean, well, to some degree. I mean, I've got the King of Darkness, which I'm just so excited for. You know, an event they're adding Asylum into, which we're, you know, all incredibly grateful for. And then this, and the Tricks, we're just going to have an incredible first weekend of the season. It's a World Championships year, so that's the biggest event there is in the sport, which we all know. And so, like, I guess that's the last event of the season. So that's, everything's going to be building towards that. And, you know, and between the sort of opening weekend in America of the year and the end, which is, you know, World Champs hanging in Florida, it's going to be a lot of tournaments. But yeah, I mean, some stuff's going to be different. I think I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, you're being rather coy on that subject, you know, because it's an event that takes place, Memorial Day weekend. I'm guessing we're probably going to see you elsewhere.
Yeah, well, so yeah, I've been rendered ineligible for the Masters this year. I received a communication from Nautique Boats last year that I wouldn't be eligible to compete this year, and that's as a result of the I'm being careful what I say here, of the situation that happened at the Masters last year involving Boy 6 at 39, which had a big impact on, you know, would I make the final, would I not. I was chasing my third Masters title in a row, having won in 2019, didn't happen in 2020, and then won again in 2021. I was going for number three, and yeah, I was skiing well enough to win it again, I believe, and unfortunately, let's say an incident occurred where I was the judging decision was that I did not make the turn at Boy 6 successfully, and as a result of that, there was I had an emotional response to something that I was to the decision which I found confusing, and so yeah, I was unfortunately disqualified from the Masters last year, which, to be honest with you, at that point I had already not made the final, so it wasn't, you know, it didn't have a huge effect on me. You only get paid down to fourth place, but I, you know, more importantly, I wasn't able to defend the title that I'd won the previous 2 years. And so from there, here we are. I'm not going to be competing in the Masters this year. I think that's a shame. I think it's obviously not what I would have chosen. And you know, I think also when you've got the champion of two of the three previous years, and I mean, I think that last year I should have been able to compete for that in the final. The, you know, I think it's not all that great for the Masters, if I'm honest. But yeah, so no Masters for me this year.
Okay, now, and after the Masters was concluded, I mean, you were able to ski in pretty much every tournament that was available to you whilst things were taking shape in the background, not only with Correct Craft, but also at the IWWF level. Are you in a position to comment on that?
Yeah, you know, I can. I mean, you know, there was let's say an interaction with the International Federation over the next months, which, you know, which was, you know, incredibly stressful. It went on till basically the end of the year, and I had all sorts of tournaments and stuff, and it was pretty tricky to deal with. I have to say it certainly didn't contribute to any success that I had. But, you know, the result of it was that I was free to ski in every tournament. I mean, unfortunately, I did have a back injury after returning to Europe. But, I mean, you know, so there was all sorts of rumors going around that I was banned from all tournaments and all that sort of stuff. Well, you know, let's say there was curious origins of those rumors. But, no, I've always been eligible to ski in every water ski competition. I've never had a ban, and I remain eligible to ski you know, with an exception of being deemed ineligible for the Masters and actually the two Masters qualifying series in the next few weeks by Nautique.
Okay, go deep into the weeds with that one, because, I mean, these are two record capability tournaments, right? I mean, they offer no cash prize, no money, no cash prize, no nothing, and yet you're ineligible for those as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to enter, and I was told by the organizer that per Nautique, I was ineligible. I don't really feel like I should have a view on that here. It's, yeah, would I like to compete in them? Absolutely. Did I want to? Yes. It's something I've done the last few. I've been qualified for the Masters the last 2 years that these qualifying series have happened, and I've always competed in at least one of the qualifying series because I think it benefits my season. So yeah, I'm being deprived of a chance to prepare for my season, and also, you know, these are places where big scores happen. So what's unfortunate is that the World Championships seeding is going to be based on scores from the world ranking list, and so I'm losing an opportunity to seed myself for the World Championships. So yeah, I mean, it is disappointing, and would I rather it was another way? Yes, but I don't run the sport.
There are a lot of people out there that wish you did.
I mean, I don't know about that, and I certainly don't want to run the sport. I contribute as much as I can to it, but I've got a lot on already, and my aim ultimately is just to be the best water skier that I can possibly be, and to reach the highest heights. I don't need to do anything more than that. But yeah, the whole thing is frustrating. I mean, I had $10 for everyone that came up to me in the last year, having seen the situation as it unfolded, and said to me, well, you know, that was just very, very confusing and disappointing and strange. I mean, I don't need to get into that, but I would rather things were not the way they are. Absolutely.
Yeah, with all of those $10 added up together, you'd definitely have enough money in the bank for a protest or anything like that. But we'll skip aside from that one.
Or a you know, a couple of pro tournament wins.
Maybe you know it's prize money is going up a little higher with each successive season as we get more and more competition. So the next time we'll see you on the water, probably the first time that we'll see you on the water in a professional setting, will be Lake 38, wouldn't it?
No, King of Darkness.
King of Darkness.
Tony, let me do that one. I really want to do that one. I want to do Swiss.
Swiss as well. No. But then you get Lake 38 afterwards. I'm going like a few steps down the line here. My apologies for that.
Yeah, yeah. Lake 38, and then of course we move into the tournaments in Europe. We've got four or five, which is going to be exceptional. I mean, as a European like yourself, I just love it that the sport's expanding over there. We want the sport obviously to expand everywhere, but you know, it's great that it's huge in America in terms of the pro scene, but it's also really, really good that it's going abroad as well. And yeah, I mean, we talk about San Giovasio and Caiaphas, and we're going to go back to Lacano, which is, you know, it's all incredibly exciting. And then thereafter, we come back. Unfortunately, no Hilltop this year, which is such a shame because it was such a great tournament, but you know, maybe we'll see that again. California is always amazing. Mastercraft Pro, Malibu, a couple weeks off, World Championships, and then drop the mic and get out of here. That's going to be a long, stressful season. I'm not sure I can take the pressure for any longer than, you know, October 17th or whatever it's going to be. I'm going to have to.
And I'm guessing you're not flying KLM or anything like that, no?
Okay, no. I've invested in like three air tags, which go on sort of, you know, I've got one on my fin, one in my front binding, and one just strapped to the ski. So they're not going to lose my ski again, I don't think, or at least I hope not.
Well, there you go. I think you mirror a lot of people out there, and a lot of my skiing friends actually got air tags for Christmas, which is always good. You know, very, very thoughtful gift going forwards.
Yeah, I mean, we should get Apple. I mean, with all of their billions, they should just chuck a couple of mil towards us for a sponsorship. But yeah, I mean, everyone go buy air tags. They're incredible.
Or maybe we can teach Elon Musk to ski.
Yep, we could do that. Yeah, the twit himself.
Anyway, and just a few moments ago, you called me a European, which I've never had that label where that moniker thrust upon me or anything like that. You know, I'm a British to the core. But anyways, good season coming up. We anticipate. We got the King of Darkness, as you correctly said. That's gonna be a slalom in the dark for the final round of that competition. Just really take us a little bit into that, because like slalom in the dark is. It is just absolutely crazy pants, isn't it? Because, I mean, your whole depth perception, speed and what have you is totally off skew.
It is. I mean, it always depends. I think it's like for the jumpers as well. Like, you know, they can commit to go and do a night jump, you know, somewhere in the world. And they don't know until they turn up there and practice actually how bad it's going to be. Now, at Moomba, we usually do that night slalom. And it's pretty good. I mean, you know, you've got sort of... floodlights kind of stuck because when you kind of go into them it's very tricky, but when you've got like at Moomba you've got all the sort of fairground rounds and stuff, you've got a little bit of light from everywhere, so you can kind of make it work. We did one at Oxford for the nationals last year, and the floodlights, let's say they were, but also I mean it did incredibly fast, but the first pass seems to be always the worst, and then you kind of get into a little bit of a rhythm. So yeah, I'm excited. It's great. You know, we talked about, like Joel was saying, about, you know, adding in different events. Incredibly grateful to the Garcias for bringing in slalom. I've got to make the top four on the Thursday qualifier to get to the Saturday final. And I'm extremely motivated to do that. Obviously, training very hard here and then move on to Swiss the next day for everyone knows how good of an event Swiss is. It's usually the first event of the season and people tend to tune in and love it. That is going to be brilliant. And I'm just so excited, I guess, as a water ski fan to have two events back to back. I mean, it's going to be just a wonderful opening weekend. It's like the opening day of the World Cup, you know, or the Premier League season in football, or some would say soccer, where you just got, so, you know, it goes from 0 to 100 really, really quick. And it's just so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm a little nervous. Let me put it to you this way: I'm excited, but I'm nervous at the same time, because, I mean, I'll be with the call on both webcasts back to back. I'll be calling jump all the way through to 10 PM, 11 PM, and then I'm going to get some real shut eye, because at about 7:45 in the morning the next day I've got Swiss Pro Slalom. It's going to be a challenge. I got to tell you. I mean, I'm not kidding here.
Yeah, but lucky you're a consummate professional, Tony. I mean, I have no doubt you'll do a bloody good job. And I think, yeah, you'll just need to rely a little bit on the people that you're on, your co-commentators, which I'm sure you'll get in some incredible co-commentators in both situations. And I love that. That's my favorite part of the commentary of the webcast, is the sort of the interaction, the debate, in the commentary. I think it's fantastic.
Yes. Actually, that's not a bad point. Alexei Zernasek and Matt Rini were doing that for the balance at the Swiss Pro Tricks. I haven't really mentioned them, and I've got to mention them, really. I mean, because they spared me my voice on a couple of occasions, to be blunt. But I tell you what, they offered like a world of knowledge and experience into that role, and I'm certainly grateful for that. And how do you feel about their contribution?
Well, Matt, I mean, Matt's always good. He does all the slalom. I mean, you know, the guy's got, I mean, for God's sake, he's Joel Poland's coach. He knows everything there is to know about overall skiing.
And Joe Poland.
There you go. He wasn't any surprise to me that he did an incredible job. But yeah, I mean, Alexei, like, it was brilliant too, because he, you know, we haven't seen him too much on the mic. But yeah, I loved it. And what I loved was how humble he was. He was, you know, talking about Pato, who broke his world record, you know, not 6 months ago, and he was so, you know,
humble.
He had lot of grace. He was very complimentary about all the skiers, and you know, I'm sure he'd probably want to be out there with them. Not sure what the status is with the ban on Russian and Belarusian skiers these days, but if that's why he wasn't competing himself. But it's it was great. I mean, anytime you can get a legend in the booth, you know, it's like when Regina's commentating at the, I don't know, the Lake 38. You know, it's just like, well, how cool is that?
Yeah,
like it's just incredible to get these top people that you don't often hear from that much. And it's excellent.
And actually, you do raise a point about the Belarusian and Russian skiers, and then you're thinking to yourself, oh my word, another can of worms I've got to delve into right now. But I'm going to hold off on that. I'm going to put a little reminder in my notebook and ask you about that a little bit when the King of Darkness comes by, because both Hanna Strzaltsova and Sasha Denyerskaya, both formerly Belarusian skiers, ski under the white flag at the moment, to the best of my knowledge, and their status could actually change even further prior to the King of Darkness and the subsequent tournaments to come afterwards. But yeah, I'll make a note of that, and I'll raise that issue with you going forward. But I understand that you're being called into the towboat, so I better let you go and earn your crust a little bit, so to speak. And is there anything you want to say in parting?
No, not really. I thank you for having me, and let's all have a great year. I mean, I'm excited for myself and hopefully going to get some good results. But I mean, yeah, I loved this weekend. I really, truly did. I thought it was just so, I mean, not to sound like a sort of gushing idiot, but to be involved in something like that and to see a new event happen. I saw what it meant to all the trick skiers too. And I just, you know, they all said it a little bit. They're like, hey, you know, if you want to have tricks at your event, we'll turn up. And I really do hope it happens. They deserve it. They're incredible, incredible athletes, maybe the best athletes in the sport, with the variation that they do and the ability of these young guys to be just so incredibly consistent, you know, under pressure. I just love that. So yeah, I'm hoping for more trick events going forward.
And you said you were out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I mean, well, like I say, I'm no interviewer, you know. So I Vince is a good friend of mine. All the TWC guys are good friends of mine. So it seemed like a natural thing, you know, if they didn't have anyone for me to do it, and I was excited to do it. But yeah, I hope the trickers would say that I wasn't intrusive. I was respectful. There was a couple of times Vince is shouting in my ear, get an interview, and I'm like, I'm not going to interview, and the guy's got headphones on, he's in the zone, you know. So I think I did a little bit there from the athlete perspective to be slightly helpful. But no, it was great, and I'd always happy to help out in that sort of way if it's necessary.
All right, then. That was Freddie Winter, and this was the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. Thanks a lot for tuning in. If you want more details about the podcast, podcast@waterskibroadcasting.com, podcast@waterskibroadcasting.com for any info. And if you want to financially support the webcast, then you can use that same email address too, and I'll be more than happy to talk to you. In the meantime, this is Tony Lightfoot, and until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.